All right, we'll be back in just a moment with your phone calls as we talk about the intuition, human communications with the other side, and animal communications next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our final segment here with Nikki Cuthbertson's final hour as we talk about animal communication, human communication as well. Is there anything out there on the other side, Nikki, that could be pressing, that could be dangerous, that they're trying to tell us?
I think that there's a lot of dark energies out there that really feed off of the negativity that we experience here on the earth plane. I've been really blessed in not having encountered a lot of it, but I do think that there is a lot out there. So I think that when you do this as your own practice, I think it's really important that you just have a strong intention that you're protected and that you're able to have your guides really support you and the angelic realm support you in the work. But I always create a circle of light and protection around myself before I open myself up, because there are negative energies out there. And
oh, sure is. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've done a lot of house clearings and that sort of a thing. And as scary as some of those things are, a lot of those energies require a lot of love. And there's a lot, even though we need to have boundaries with it. So it's just kind of that mixed bag about where you are in relationship to being able to offer that. And if you can't, I think it's better to separate energy fields or have someone help you with it. But there's a lot of dark energy out there.
Let's go to Bill, State of Washington. Welcome to the program, Bill. Go ahead.
Yeah, I hate to interject politics into this discussion, but I really would like to get your take, you know, with your unique point of view on the topic of personhood, legal personhood for the great apes. I mean, we hear about legal personhood for like the unborn fetus and how that affects the rights of the mother. And, you know, we hear all this in regards to that in this country. But also, I mean, there is a personhood movement to protect the great apes, even though, you know, we generally don't experiment on great apes anymore, medically or otherwise. It has been done in the past, and frankly, there's nothing to prevent it. And I even heard a person on, I forget what show, but it was a guest, he was talking about bonobos being so similar to humans, but yet he called them monkeys. They are not monkeys, all right? They're a great ape, just like Homo sapiens are. And I was wondering if you have any opinion on that.
Well,
or do you communicate with them?
I haven't been asked to communicate with any apes, but I really do believe that everything is living and sentient, and I feel that I'm against animal testing. I don't know really what your question is around that when you talk about personhood, but I really do think that when animal testing is done on them, that they have the experience of it hurting. I think that they're frightened. I think that they're terrified. All of those things that we would feel. I don't know if that really answers your question.
Can you explain personhood to people?
Yeah.
Go ahead. That's you, Nikki.
I don't really have a definition of it. This is the first time I've heard of it described in this way, so I would...
All right, let's get Bill to do it.
Bill, yeah.
Bill, give us kind of a definition of that.
Yeah, okay, personhood. All right, human beings, it's against various international laws and certainly the laws of America to do medical experimentation on human beings. I mean, and then their torture, of course. We've heard so much, you know, about Abu Ghraib. You know, you can't torture human beings. And not legally, anyways. And this personhood has been brought up, the personhood legal debate has been brought up on the right wing in America to protect an unborn fetus. What they're saying is, their premise is, an unborn fetus is, in fact, a human being, therefore is entitled to certain protections that override the legal rights of the mother. And, and this is how we debate it in this country. But also, like I said, great apes, even the great Roman doctor Galen, all his artistry, all his artwork that we used for anatomy of humans for centuries was not based on the human anatomy. It was based on the anatomy of chimpanzees, because under Roman law at the time, you could not, you know, you couldn't do an autopsy on a human, all right? And, you know, so we've known for centuries that human beings are related. You know, we are, Homo sapiens are in the great ape family. And, you know, and there's a debate on whether or not they should receive these protections.
Well, I got to tell you, there's an elephant in Brooklyn called Happy, an elephant. And lawyers are arguing in court that that elephant should have human rights. And I think, Nikki, maybe that's fair, don't you?
I do. I think they're sentient beings. It brings up like a whole can of worms in this. And like you're saying, it's a really charged topic. And it's part of what's up, I think, on the planet right now to raise awareness. And so I think that, not that it's right that they have the experience of being tortured, but to the degree that it is happening as much as anything else is on the planet, sex trafficking of teenage children, all of these stuff that are wrongs, I feel that as these beings are having this experience, and to the degree that it raises awareness and we can make different choices, we may not see all the ramifications of the different choices within our lifetime, but I think it's contributing to massive change here on the planet.
If you were in a court of law and you were on this witness stand testifying under oath, and a lawyer asked you if animals have emotion, if they can feel, what would you say?
Absolutely, they do. Absolutely. I don't have any doubt about that at all.
Next up, let's go to Barbara in Carmel, Indiana. Welcome to the show. Hey, Barb.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Chihuahua, and she's a medical alert dog, and she's a real sweetheart, but she's been sick lately, and I don't know what to do.
Have you taken her into the vet? One of the things that comes up for me as you're talking is that she gets headaches on the left side of her head, and there is a way that she's got tightness in her neck.
Headaches.
But also there's a way that it affects the left side of her her eye as well.
Well, take that, Barbara, and run with it.
Well, what food should I feed her, or... I just want to make her life happy.
How old is she?
She's 7.
Oh, she's young.
Yeah, she is young.
But what are you feeding her now?
Rachel Ray, Blue Wolf. I've tried everything. Spaghetti, chicken, steak, green beans.
Well, maybe that's part of the problem. What do you think, Nikki?
I really, I know it's a mixed bag for a lot of people, but I'll just say it. I'm really, I really support the raw diet, and I think it's really clean, and I use it on my own animals. And if your dog has eaten a certain way for a certain amount of time, then I would transition her over slowly, but I really had good results with a raw diet. And you know, it's a mixed bag when you go with different vets, and so I feel really hesitant to you know, really ground myself in an opinion about it when there's such mixed opinions about it. But for me, that's really worked, and I've seen really good results with my client base as well.
What do you think of table scraps for dogs and cats? I don't like that.
Yeah, I think it really depends on what it is, but a lot of people love to give that to them as a treat, and it's a way of sharing, and the animals look forward to it. I'm not big into table scraps. I like them to have really, really clean foods. And I mean, I eat really clean, but I just, I also don't really prefer having my animals beg around me. They already know what time it is and what time they get the treats, and so they get pretty insistent around that time. But I'm not real big on having them have table scraps.
We've got Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Welcome to the show. Hi, Frank.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you.
Thank you, sir.
You know, I had an epiphany. I saw a blind dog And they were the 5-year-old and the 7-year-old in the family. They were wrestling the dog, and the dog was getting the best of them. And the mother had to make them bathe themselves. I was wondering, has Nikki has she communicated with a blind dog to see how they feel? And what about animals that are about to be killed or slaughtered for food, or the matador's bull? Do they know they're about to be killed? And then one other thing, in Saudi Arabia, the thoroughbred horses have air-conditioned stalls, and the jockeys don't. The thoroughbreds get a pension, and the jockeys don't.
Yeah, so go back to your first question. I know there is a whole series of questions right there. In terms of the animals going to slaughter, they pick up on a lot of that energy and the fear that all the animals are feeling at that time, and they do have the experience of fear.
And you know, and he's hung up now, so you know.
Oh. Okay, there was another question. Oh, about being blind. I'll answer that question, even if he's not on the phone. I have worked with a lot of animals, horses as well as dogs that have had their eyes taken out due to blindness and pressure in their eyes due to glaucoma. And they do adapt and they do adjust. And I've worked with amazing people who have worked with their animals around voice and having them be able to track the voice and then throw balls and still find the ball even though they don't have eyes. It's amazing to me. And one of the ways they work with that is to work with them with puzzles and treats and within the puzzle, and so that it's really, really stimulating. And so it's just a matter of keeping your animal stimulated. I think it's not fair to have, in that situation, children wrestling an animal that's blind. It's without warning, or if they're not used to it, and that's not part of what they did before they had the blindness. But it does also give you the opportunity to be really creative in being their seeing eye person. And what I've also seen is that other animals in the house will step up to the plate and be a seeing eye dog and help that animal that is blind. It's really a beautiful thing.
In terms of the animals that have passed over, do they come to you or do you find them and go to them?
It's a little bit of both. I feel like I meet in the halfway point when I know that somebody wants to communicate with a very specific animal. I mean, for the radio show, obviously, we're kind of, it's just really going through a series of calls and doing this. But in a session with me, it's a little bit more intimate where you would have a photo. I would look at that photo as I get drawn into the animal's energy and the heart energy of the person. A lot of information comes through. So it's really a collaborative effort between me and the animal or the person on the other side, as well as the person that's sitting in front of me. So that being said, a lot of different animals and people will pop in when I am open. But usually if somebody wants to communicate with a specific animal or person and I have a photo, information does come through. Somebody might trump that first before that animal responds, and it might be some animal or person they haven't, just we're not even expecting to hear from. And it's really wonderful when that happens, but eventually that animal gets to be heard as well.
Let's go to Sharon, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Welcome, Sharon. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just wondering. I lost my son about 5 years ago, and then I had to put my dog down in July of this year. And I was wondering if you see anything or hear anything or whatever.
First of all, I really want to say how sorry I am for your loss. I
double loss.
Losing a child, and I'm sure that your dog that you had to put down really supported you with a lot of the grief you were carrying in your heart. And a lot of times when you lose an animal after losing a loved one, it re-triggers all the old grief. So my heart goes out to you for that. And I'm just going to take a couple breaths and just connect with either your son or your dog.
Okay.
In relationship to your Chihuahua, I just got this incredible, vibrant personality, but also a little bit of this Velcro dog with you. And I keep seeing flowers in my mind's eye. And I don't know if you like to garden or if that is, if you did anything in particular for your dog, but she keeps, or he just keeps showing me flowers. I don't know if that's significant.
Does that ring a bell at all, Sharon?
Yes. I planted some flowers at her grave.
Yeah.
A rose bush.
So there's this feeling of her being aware of that, and what a special gesture. And I'm sure it was really a tender moment for you, and she wants you to know that, one, that she saw it, and two, that you weren't alone.
Well, how about my son?
I don't know if he's coming through or not. Is he, Nikki?
I'm just going to sit with this for a moment. How long ago did he pass? And
Five
how old was
ago.
He?
And he was 40.
40. And when was that, Sharon?
5 years ago.
5 years ago.
And what's his name?
Michael.
Michael. All right. Well, if you can connect, Nikki, give it a try. If not,
I'm trying right now. When I connect with him, do you know if he had any issues with alcohol or drinking or anything like that?
Oh, yes. He committed suicide. He was an alcoholic drug addict.
Oh, yeah. Geez. I have this real burning in my throat, and it's his way of explaining that the alcohol really burned his throat. And I feel the feeling that I want to convey to you from Michael is that there isn't really anything that you could have done more to support him at the time. He was on this course with his life, and as much as you loved him, it had nothing to do with you. And yet I'm sure it really hurt you, but it wasn't due to any of your inadequacies. And he really wants to make amends with you around that, because I think that you experienced a lot of heartache and pain around that.
Nikki, when you communicate like this, do you meditate? What are you doing?
I usually meditate, but then the other part of me needs to really move my body a lot. So I exercise a whole lot. And between the two of it, it's like movement and stillness. And when I can move in between the two, I find my happy medium. For this kind of work, I have to get really, really still. There's a feeling almost of my heart feeling like a satellite dish. It kind of tilts and swirls. There's this real physical movement to it, and it captures information, and then I will sense it in my body as I capture it, with both the feeling of whatever the person was going through and a lot of compassion for that, as well as physical sensations in my body. So this process with Michael was a very physical thing in my throat, a real burning in my throat, and it was this way that he wanted me to be able to recognize him, because obviously I don't know his mom, and that information would mean something to her.
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment and take final phone calls with our special guest, Nikki Cuthbertson, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final segment with Nikki Cuthbertson, as we talk about the intuition, dealing with the human spirit and animal spirits as well. But if you had that preference again, Nikki, whether to deal with a human spirit or animal spirit, it's up in the air for you, isn't it?
It really is. I really, really love the animals, though. I'm very enamored by them, and I feel like it's really interesting to work with them. In terms of species, cats feel really different to me than dogs and versus horses, and they all have different ways that they work with us. And so there's like a consciousness that gives rise to those particular forms and species, just like it does for us. And I'm always fascinated by the different species and what they do for us. So I really, really love all of my work. I really do. I feel like it puts me in a perpetual state of wonder and gratitude.
Let's go to the phones now. Barry's in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hello, Bear.
Hello there, George. Always a pleasure, buddy. And listen, talking about the dogs and cats with Nikki and Tommy, his best buddy Freddie and my best buddy Rocky that I told you about a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
You know as well as I do, George, and you do too, Nikki. Eye contact is where all communication starts with dogs or cats or any other animal. I could look into Rocky's eyes, and he'd lock onto my eyes, and sometimes we would look at each other for 60 or 90 or 120 seconds at a time. And George, I could actually wink at him, and he'd perk up and try to wink back, and he didn't know how to wink, so he'd just blink his eyes real fast.
That's funny. That's great.
Well, they always say it's the window to the soul, and I guess the only time we wouldn't do that would be with a real aggressive dog or something where that strong eye contact would maybe be triggering. But for somebody like you who really, really, really loves their animals, they convey so much love and emotion through their eyes, and I think it's one of the ways that you could get drawn into merging with them. And if that's a way that you have a relationship with them, it's going to be really easy for you to be able to do animal communication with your dogs. One of them that feels like it's a smaller dog, I don't know what the name of the dog would be. All your dogs really love you. They're happy. But there's one of them that is a little bit more itchy through the coat right now. And I don't know why, but I'm just getting the feeling that the animal might be two-toned, two different colors. But it is complaining of a little bit of itchy skin.
Do you deal with all kinds of animals beyond dogs and cats?
Mm-hmm. I do. Like I said, I had even worked with dolphins, and I've had some really interesting communications with wildlife, too, and when I go in nature. But I tell you, if you go outside, the crows, the hummingbirds, the bluebirds, if you're out in your yard enough and you garden, they recognize you. And so there's a really cool way you can send information. Communication is really two-way. It's the sending and receiving of information. And the intuitive ways we spoke about, being clairvoyant, clairaudient, ... all the way down, where you might have a dominant way of communicating. What's interesting is that an animal might have a way that is different than your dominant way. And so as you get more proficient at doing the work, you're able to start changing your channels so that you can lock in and dial in on how that particular animal communicates. My horse is one of the rare beings that when I communicate with him, it's more of a clairaudient experience, but a lot of animals are more image based. And then a lot of horses that are in competition, as well as very athletic animals, maybe cats that are really agile and dogs that might, like border collies, and they might compete, or animals that do sheep herding trials, they might be more really kinesthetic. And so that way of communicating is sending sensations through my body. So when I'm first posing and opening to an animal, I'm also assessing how they prefer to communicate, and then I adapt and I change through my tool bag until I can match their vibration to their style.
I mean, do you even communicate with like a goldfish that might have passed on?
You know, maybe. I've never actually tried that, but I had a really strong connection with one of my turtles and tortoises that had crossed over. It was a really deep emotional bond. That tortoise would almost jump in its enclosure like a dog when it would see the dog, when it would see me come home. It would get up on its hind legs and start trying to paw, and I would create little raspberry treasure hunts all over my house and hide little raspberries, and it would go on this treasure hunt all over my house looking for raspberries. And I have communicated with it on the other side. I've never tried a goldfish, but there's no reason you really couldn't. You can communicate with animals in the wild, and they're very instinctual and very primal and have a really a different, raw way of communicating than animals that are more domesticated and used to humans.
What about insects?
Well,
For example, a praying mantis. There's something very special about a praying mantis. You ever look at one? Tilts its head at you, and I mean, it's weird.
I know. They're very alien-looking, and yet I really feel that you can connect with them. I've had communications with spiders in my house. I had a communication with a mouse in our house, and I sent it a map so that it could leave the house. And after it had been invading our cupboards for quite a while, after I did that communication with it, it left. I never had to do anything about it to try to catch and release. It was just, it was gone after that. It was really amazing. I've worked with doves that were roosting in people's roof lines, and the woman told me her husband was going to take a rifle and shoot them, and could I please, before he did that, give him the message that that could be going on, and she was desperate. She wanted them to leave, and I did the reading, and that night, they left.
They left. They got smart.
They did. It was amazing. I'm not saying it works every time, but those kinds of stories and experiences are so gratifying when you do have those breakthrough kind of moments. They're precious.
Let's go to Elisa in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Elisa.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Hey. I was hoping that you might be able to shed some light on this relentless, extremely destructive behavior of my cat named Harley that was adopted New Year's, so 8 months ago, and very little was known about her other than she came up to Portland from Palm Springs on what's called the Last Chance Program, and she's somewhere between 2 and 6 years old, but I'm wanting to know if she suffered some kind of, like, trauma or loss and how I can help her to, and help myself through helping her be.
She's what, like a little mischief cat?
What kind of destructive behavior are you experiencing with her, and how old is she?
Well, one of the adoption papers said two, the other one said six, so I don't know.
Yeah, she feels on the younger side. One of the things that I feel is that, one, she was separated from either her litter mates or her mama too young, and then went through a series of changes. I feel she's had more than one home and at a young age, and so I feel like it created a sense of not really feeling safe in the world and acting out. So when we think about what you could do to soothe her, let me just get a clear read on that. And I'm just going to take a couple of breaths and open up to her and see what you can.
And what's her name, Lisa, again?
Her name's Harley.
Harley?
Harlequin, yes.
Ah, Harley. I had a buddy in school
named
Harley.
Does she scratch you at all or anything like that?
She constantly licks and chews and bites your fingers.
Mm-hmm, the biting, yeah. I can feel that. One of the ways, I don't know how you would do it with a cat. I don't do behavioral stuff, but one of the things that really comes through with her is she doesn't have boundaries because she didn't have the litter mate or the mama to keep her in check. And so that might be something that you look into with a behaviorist to try to help her with that. Right now with the touch, sometimes it can be too stimulating for her, but your voice and talking to her and the tone of your voice, she's had people be impatient with her. And so that feeling is unsettling to her. And you being able to talk to her in a soothing voice with maybe, say, a little bit less touch, and over time, you'll be able to touch her more as she kind of integrates into your household. And is she an only cat in your house?
Yes, yes. I have 300 square feet total, so it's
She's a little bit nervous about being an only cat. And that being said, I know a lot of cats have trouble when it gets into a multi-cat household. But for her, there's a little bit of a loneliness with being an only cat combined with that separation. So there's a little bit of awkwardness with some of her behavior. Do a lot of talking to her. She understands you. She hears you. She's unsettled and has to discharge some of that energy. One of the things you could do, some people use that feel away little pheromone that you can plug in. Not everybody has great results, but some animals really respond to that. And the other thing is there's a flower essence by Rescue Remedy that is for animals that you can spray and maybe put on a cotton ball or a piece of clothing near her bed. And there's also one by Alaskan Essences that is called Soul Support. And that might help her transition a little bit more and ground into the fact that this is her forever home.
I have had stories, Nikki, with people who've called into the program with regards to a cat that had passed on. and they're in bed, and they can see the imprints of the little paw prints as if the cat were walking on the bed.
They have to work really hard to create that kind of imprint here in this realm. So it's really a testament of that cat, that love for those people. It's a really big compliment and testimony to their love.
Joe in the Bronx. Go ahead, Joseph.
Hey, George. How are you?
All right, Joe. Thanks.
Good. Yeah, Nikki, I wanted to ask you, concerning humans, are we predestined to either suffer injuries or disabilities in our life? And what is the meaning behind that challenge?
That's such a big question, Joe. I don't know about predestined, but I do think, well, it's semantics. I think that there's way that we're contracted to have certain experiences that we chose before.
Depends on how careless people are, I guess, Nikki.
Yeah, you know, and there is a way that every negative experience that you have has meaning and purpose and is opening you up to something.
You still there? Oh, we lost you right at the end here. Nikki, are you there? Nope, she's gone. Call her back, Tom. We only got a minute left, and we'll get her back on. But let me go back to you, Joe. Interesting question, Joseph. What sparked it?
Well, I've had a few injuries in my life, and, you know, they came unexpectedly. And I was just wondering if there's any kind of meaning to these things happening. And I know, you know, disabilities, people who have disabilities in life, they you know, kind of struggle through life. I just wanted to know, is it a predestined thing? Who, you know, or is it random?
That's a good possibility and a good question. She was right in the middle of giving you a pretty good answer and then disappeared. I'm not sure we're going to get her back. We've only got about 2 minutes left in the program. Anyway, so let's go to Carol in Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Welcome to the show. Hi, Carol.
Hi, George. How are you tonight?
Okay, great. What's up?
Well, I just heard Nikki disappear.
She just poof. She went off into the ether.
Yeah. I wanted to.
She's back. They tell me she's back. So.
Oh, wonderful.
There you go.
Oh, I'm so sorry there now? About that. The phone had died, but
just
I
went out on us.
Do that. Hi, Nikki.
Now you got Carol on the line,
now
and we've got a minute left. Go ahead, Carol,
fast.
So, well, I have a beloved that I lost, my cat Richard, and I wanted to see if you were able to convey anything.
Little Richard, the lion-hearted.
Oh, there you go.
See if you get a little feeling there, and I only got about 40 seconds left there, Nikki.
Okay. Did you get Richard when he was a kitten?
I'm fairly young, yeah. Not baby kitten, but definitely young, yeah.
Well, there's this feeling of having this really childlike innocence and always seeing you as its mother. So there's an imprint that Richard did with you as his mother, and he wants you to know that even though he was a cat, he really sees you as a parent, a mother figure to him, and he loves you.
Oh, cool. You provide a great service, Nikki. For people who want to get a hold of you, what do? Just go to your website?
My website, NikkiCuthbertson.com, and then Facebook is the same. It's Intuitive Soul Support for Humans and Their Animals, and Instagram is the same. It's just my name.
Super, and we've got all those links at CoastToCoastAM.com. Thanks, Nikki. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.